Welcome, everybody. Mickey says it's a quarter till 10 and time for us to go. I'm Bob Henry. I'm the Information Security Officer at Boise State University, and I'm pleased to introduce George Matthew and his presentation, Application Security in the Cloud. Please remember to go online to evaluate the session, and you can tweet your thoughts at the hashtag #security11, which will give Shannon some fun to do back there. Let's see, George Matthew is the Chief Technology Officer for Goodwin College in Drexel University. He also directs the software development efforts for the Math Forum, the world's leading online community for math education. He's published a number of peer-reviewed papers in various conferences and has reviewed articles for various conferences and journals. Please welcome George Matthew.
Thank you. My contact information is here, george.matthew@drexel.edu. At the outset, I have a CISSP, and I'm also a member of the Cloud Security Alliance as well as the Computer Security Institute. I have to claim that I don't have answer to all the questions that I pose here. I may not have answers to all your questions also. But there are a lot of questions that turn out in this cloud environment. So it's good to think about this and to see what the approaches are. And again, the views expressed here are mine. You may have a different experience. Feel free to share that with me. Just to give you a background, one of the divisions that I manage is Math Forum, which is, as Bob said, it's the world's largest online community for math education. They have been around even before 1995, before the web came along. And we are a SaaS provider, so have been doing cloud for a long time. So we have some insight into how cloud providers work. At the same time, we use a number of cloud services, including Gmail, Postini, Amazon Turk, Salesforce, a number of the services we use. So we are in a unique position where we already are a cloud provider as well as a cloud user. So I thought that may give us a good insight into what is going on in both worlds. And you may be able to gain some insight into that. The focus of this presentation is strictly on applications. Applications do need storage and a database on the back end. I'm not going to go into detail about that because that's a whole big discussion. But I will touch upon them only as it is needed. This is something that I observed. As the technology around the society evolves and the way people collaborate with each other evolve, it's only natural that they would like to bring that experience into the workplace. It's definitely going to happen. It's only a matter of time. So what about cloud? It's nothing different. So I just want to ask you, how many of you have are already using cloud applications in your business? Okay, that's kind of less than half. But this is a number I got from one of the recent WebBarracks. I was participating in a cloud vendor WebBarracks, and this is a number they said. 30 are already in the cloud, 26% is in the process, 40% is planning, 4% has no plans. But look at that number, it's close to, it's 96% is already in the cloud or moving to the cloud. And I think there is a next presentation from Google. In the abstract it said that they are evaluating like 85%. So this is, I think, a newer survey. Cloud is nothing new. This is just a new name for a technology that already existed. It is repackaged, rebranded with some extra value propositions and a lot of hoopla behind big companies promoting this. I don't think there is anything new here, but it has had different names in the past: utility computing, on-demand computing, grids, analytic grid, as well as data grids. Another big thing is these utility computing and all that, when they existed before, they were not web-based. Now you see that a lot of applications are web-based, which makes it much attractive. And that's one of the biggest factors of the success of the cloud. And I'll come to that. Now before I go into my details, according to NIST, there are three service models. The first one is called SaaS, service, the software as a service. That is, you are just using an application in the cloud. You are not doing anything with the application. You are just using, just like going to Facebook or going to Gmail. You are just using the application. You are not doing any configuration on the application. Second one is called PaaS. platform as a service. In the platform as a service, there is somebody out there who is going to help you set up this infrastructure. They may have a Tomcat server, they may have a IIS server. They will provide the infrastructure for you, but you will have to still write the glue between them. So they will have an SDK, or they will have an API that you have to use to write your applications, but they will host it for you. So there is some intermediary there. They'll help you with some SDK, but you have to do your work. These are the two things I'll concentrate on. And the third part is called the infrastructure as a service. Your whole data center is out in the cloud. You are talking about the servers and all the nine yards. I'm not going to touch that, including storage. I will be mostly concentrating on the software as a service and the PaaS. And as I mentioned before, in Math Forum, our expertise is in the SaaS, software as a service. Gmail is software as a service. Facebook is software as a service, and so on. I'll mention some of the PaaS as we go along. If you look at the application models, this is the way I define it. There are three flavors. One is called off-the-shelf. Off-the-shelf means you are getting an application that is already developed. That could be commercial. People used to call it COTS, commercial off-the-shelf. It could be open source off-the-shelf. Second one is you develop something in-house. You have the expertise to do in-house. Third one is my definition, on-the-shelf. If you never heard it before, I patented it. Just kidding. On-the-shelf is what you call a cloud application. Okay? So let's look at this application. When you develop an application in-house, you have a lot of elements that you have to work with and a lot of faces. Project management, you have to have somebody to manage the whole project. Somebody has to develop the code in-house. Source code control, testing of the applications. Then you have to buy the server and hardware. Do you have the customizations for your environment? You do the pilot testing. Then you deploy it. Then you monitor on a regular basis, and you do the maintenance, including patch fixes and upgrades. Finally, at some point in time, you say, oh, goodbye to that application. If you take off-the-shelf application, look at the faces. You don't do code development. You might get the source code. For example, Jira, they'll give you the source code, but you can get a support contract from them. You don't do any testing on the application. You got it, right? But there are other phases. So what happens is when you go from developed in-house to off-the-shelf, you cut down on a certain number of phases. Let's look at on the shelf, which is cloud. You have a project management that's for the whole migration, right? You don't develop the source code. You don't get the source code. You don't do any testing of the application. That is done by the cloud provider. You don't buy the server. You don't buy the hardware, done by the cloud provider. You do only the customizations for your environment. Like you may go to Gmail and put the branding of your institution and things like that. You may do some piloting whether the customizations are working. You don't deploy it, someone has deployed it for you. You might get a chance to monitor it. Chances are that you will not, because they will provide a console. You don't do maintenance, they will do the patch fixes, they will do the upgrades. They will tell you when I'm sunsetting it. They might go off the shelf, they may pull the plug, it's up to them. Now look at these faces. This is what people say, that when I go to the cloud, I don't have anything to worry about. Well, somebody did it for you. It's not free, but somebody did it for you. Either you pay for it or it's free. So this is what everybody says, oh, it's easy to go to the cloud. Yeah, it is easy to go to the cloud, but there are implications behind that. So let's look at some of this. Well, that's a real cloud, right? It has been accessed for millions of years. And when you go to virtual cloud, only for a few years down the lane, right? What you get is essentially a set of services. You don't know where it is. It's somewhere out there. You call it a virtual space. You call it cloud. It is there. Facebook, Twitter, Pandora, YouTube, Gmail, anything. You just go and use it. And you can hit it as a human being, or you can hit it as a bot, or you can use it with a scripted mechanism. You can hit the service any way you want it. So what are the elements of a cloud application? So I just showed you the picture. Let's look at the elements of an application. There are the services that actually use. The services are actually the application that you use. You connect through some mechanism to that from a device, iPod, iPad, whatever you want, through an interface. It could be an iPhone application, it could be a BlackBerry application, it could be a web by a user. Now, their connectivity is universally network, right? But there are two aspects to that. There is a network protocol, there is an application protocol. That's what I said here. You have a network protocol as well as an application protocol. Network protocol, nobody cares, TCP IP, done with it. Application protocol, look at that. You had FTP, you had NNTP, You had Gopher, you had IRC, you had a lot of protocols in the past. Then came HTTP. Guess what? I can do file transfer through HTTP. I can through newsreader through HTTP. I can do instant messaging through HTTP. So why do I need all these protocols? Essentially, these protocols all got tunneled into HTTP and say that, oh, I can use HTTP just for that. Guess what? The firewall people were happy. I had to punch the hole only for port 80. I don't have to worry about the rest of it. But the intrusion detection person is now has to do a lot of work. Right? That's a security trade-off. Now, so all I am saying is, I'm not saying that the protocols went away, but HTTP provided a tunnel through which you could do everything. That means all you need is probably HTTP. And your applications are now happy with HTTP. So practically all you need is a browser in a chip. That's what iPad is going against, right? All you need is a browser. You can practically get anywhere you want. So let's look at the cloud deployment ones. There are three models. I'm going to talk about only two. The third one is called a hybrid, which is not very interesting. Private cloud. You are familiar with the network perimeter, right? Your applications are inside that, and the user is connecting through the network, physically or the wireless, to the service provider in-house. Now, when the service is outside, you call it a public cloud. So the person inside sitting in your corporate building connects through the network perimeter and hits it. Now, here is a twist to that. The person may be physically sitting in your building, but that person may not be touching your network. That person can use his 3G network and connect on the internet, right? You look at iPhone, iPad, they don't have to touch your network. They can go on their own. Now take the scenario, that person is completely outside your network, road warrior or a home person, they can also connect to the same service. So the beauty of this is the service is sitting outside. The person does not have to be in your corporate network, but the person can connect to the services from anywhere they want, so long as they have broadband connectivity. And this is one aspect of, okay, so this is a complete picture. So this is one aspect of the cloud application or the characteristics. That is number four, broad network access. So there were six characteristics of cloud applications as defined by NIST. So this is the fourth one. I'm coming to the first one, resource pooling and rapid elasticity. Resource pooling means you go and use it whatever you want. And once you're done with it, give it back to the pool, like virtualized servers. So you use it and give it back when you don't want it. Rapid elasticity. A while back, a few years, probably 10 years or more, American Express announced that they're going to give a BMW Z3 or Z4 at 12 o'clock on a Tuesday, just go there and click it for $5,000, you'll get the BMW. I went there and clicked it. I could not get anywhere near the website because there were millions and millions of hits. Their server could not handle the load. And a few years back, in a Super Bowl Sunday, Denny's announced that next Sunday, you go to their website and they will get you a coupon for 50% discount for a dinner or lunch for the family. Guess what? You will have millions of hits, right? They immediately said, we cannot handle this load. They went to a cloud provider and said, oh, we want bandwidth, millions and millions of it. Cloud provider said, yes, sir, we'll give you. Give us some money. They gave the bandwidth for one day. They had millions of hits. At the end of the day, what happened? Closed it. They gave the check, walked away. They didn't have to buy the infrastructure. That's the beauty of elasticity. And the fifth one is measured service. You can actually get a console where you can go and see, how much am I using? You may have connectivity to some of the network vendors where you can say that you have a 1 gig bandwidth now. If you want to up the bandwidth, go and change the bandwidth, right? You just pay for the difference. Most of the vendors do these days. So I'm coming to the first one, on-demand service. I already mentioned about network broad network access. Number one is on-demand self-service. This is very critical from a security standpoint. If you look at the traditional brick and mortar format, I think I stole it from Duke. They had somewhere in the IT forum one of these diagrams. At the top of the layer, you have the institutional stakeholders. You give the strategic directions. And then you have the technology-focused functional initiatives. And there is another group which is non-technology-faced. But I'm just concentrating on the IT side. And then that is driven down the IT chain. IT has to buy the hardware, network, and all that. This is common, right? I call it brick and mortar IT. So in the new contemporary format, I call it traditional brick and mortar IT. But there is a parallel IT. users don't need your brick and mortar IT. They can go to a cloud IT, which is a parallel organization. They don't see it, they don't smell it, they don't touch it, but they will pay for it. Because what? They want quick response, right? So who cares about traditional brick and mortar IT? I have cloud. So that is what I said, on-demand service. The users doesn't have to wait for it. They can go and get the service they want whenever they want it. They might pay for it, they might not pay for it, but you don't have any control. So that brings us to the question of what are these two scenarios? One I call is the known. You know your network, you know your applications, you know what is being deployed. The other one, you don't know. That is called the unknown. And that is where you have a problem, right? For example, you have disaster recovery. Even if you have a small departmental issue and the department had an application on the cloud, and if the cloud has a problem, how do you address that issue? Or if you have disaster recovery plans, did you accommodate that cloud application in the disaster recovery scenario? We in Math Forum were using Postini. At one point in time, we had an issue where our mail were not getting delivered for almost 2 days. We could not get a hold of anybody in Postini. Guess what? You are on your own. Practically speaking, it did not happen. It didn't help us much. So all I'm saying is, in the known scenario, we have policies for network usage. You explicitly tell them that you use the email only for business purposes. You don't do anything illegal. You don't do anything immoral and all that sort, right? You have explicitly written out you don't use it for spamming. We have a policy for cloud usage. Practically nothing, right? So is there an institutional policy for cloud applications? I would say that because of the fact that the users do not have to use your network, but they may be sitting in your office during the regular working hours, touching the cloud application from your infrastructure, from your institutional room or physical space, you should have some policy to cover it, particularly because you may run into issues like what I mentioned before. So what is the policy you have? I would say that you should have a mechanism where either the security office or somebody should say that before you go to the cloud, get an approval from us, because you will have to actually verify to make sure that you are in line with the institutional policy. That's again my thought. And some of the providers that I deal with, I always set up a vendor agreement, even if it is free. Not really. We had to pay for most of the services that we have, but I do set up vendor agreements with them. So the question is, how do we redefine the security policies and what are the institutional policies? And the security policies have to evolve based on what you experience. For example, in Math Forum, we had a number of issues where being a SaaS environment, we have to deal with this search engines. Most of the time, they are a hassle. They kill your service because they come and search for it, and if you have some issues in the background, they just keep on eating up your CPUs and things like that. And we have a test environment where we never wanted to expose a test environment. Guess what? After 2 days, it was shown up in Bing and Google. We didn't want them to show up. So we had to change our policy saying that you should exclude from the robots right from the get-go if there's a test environment. So our policy had to be updated based on our experience. And there was one instance where we had a form. Nobody thought about it. Spammers loved the forms, right? They just script it and send it. So we had to use CAPTCHA for some of these formats. So coming back to HTML, I said that the web is one of the key components of the cloud. Let's look at the web from the beginning. Initially, you had static HTML pages. If you know static HTML pages, there's a document root and a server root. The document root could actually be a read-only file system. So there is the integrity of your data. Now, talking about security, the integrity of your data is preserved because you can have a read-only file system that contains your document root. But your server root is different. If you have any vulnerability in your server, you could be trashed. Classical example is a code red, right? It was hitting the IIS server. It is a vulnerability on the server side. Then came along, people said, no, oh, we want some dynamism. So then came along dynamic tiers, which is known as a CGI scripting initially. And then there was also the thing called a form mail. You had to submit a form and it will send a mail. Guess what? The spammers would forget about the form and they write their own script so that you can hit the mail gateway and send their own emails. And of course, you know about SQL injection. In a form, you can write embed a SQL and get it through the database. So all these security issues were there. Then came along three-tier. You had a web front-end, an application server, and a database server on the back-end. Now you have compounded the security issues, right? You had to protect each one of these layers. Each one of these may be managed by separate departments. So you'll have to take those into consideration. Traditionally, you used to put a firewall there, and then you would protect most of these servers the way you want it. So the big question is, what about the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of the data as well as of the servers? You had some mechanism to do that, either through firewall or server-level firewalls. And of course, you have all these controls in place. So, and also you had institutional policies and procedures for the security as well as the auditing part of it. So when you come to the tiers, the more tiers, right? Because you had to deal with all these complications. And each one of these tiers, you could call it a leg. And the leg could be moved around. Remember, in the previous picture, all these legs were physically sitting inside your corporate network. I could move this leg wherever I want. I'll give you an example. Here is a corporate network. Traditionally, you had an email gateway that was receiving the mail and give it to the spam filter like a Barracuda box or something like that, or a Sophos. And then it'll filter it out and give it to the Exchange server or IMAP server, whatever is your mail server. But this became a bottleneck, right? The spam filter, if you have your own spam filter, if you administer something like Sophos, you'd have to set the threshold every time you want it. And I adjust these parameters. It's a headache. It's a lot of work. And so people said, you know, I don't want to manage this one. It's too much hassle. Let me give it to somebody. So people started giving it to Postini or McAfee saying that, well, you deal with the spam part of it. What did you do? You practically took your one leg or two legs and moved it out the cloud. So now one or two of your legs is sitting outside. And now you are receiving all the email that is filtered by someone else. Guess what? What is the problem here? They have access to all the email that go through their gateway. If there is somebody who wants to actually get a hold of all the confidential email that goes through your institution, they can get it here. But it's a trade-off, right? Let's take the evolution of the cloud applications. You usually have a web front, and then there's an application server and a database server. Everybody was sitting inside your corporate network. Then you said that, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this one. Some institutions have internal and external DNS because they provide an external DNS only for the absolute necessary servers, and then the rest of this, everything is inside the internal DNS, right? So what happens when you move one service out in the cloud? This guy has to hit somebody inside, right? So you are actually exposing your internal servers information to the outside world. Somehow you had to expose it. Either you had to work with the service provider so that they will have a closed way of connecting it, or you had to externalize it through your external DNS. Somehow you had to do it. So that's another security open question there. And another problem is, once you put this, like a classical example is if you have something like a Tomcat server, the application server could be a serverless container like a Tomcat. That same Tomcat is offered as a commercial server called a TC server by SpringSource. So if you move your Tomcat application from inside your network to the cloud, it's fairly easy to move it along, but you inherit all these problems. Now the big problem here is, see, there is a URL for this application to hit it, right? Practically what you do here is you filter it so that the front end will hit it, and then you hide the way it goes. Nobody sees where it is going because it's in your corporate network and you hide it. Guess what? Once you expose it to the outside world, people can hit them directly, unless you take security measures so that they don't hit it directly. What are the problems? Number one problem is, if you change it to somewhere else, they lost their bookmark, or Google will lose the track of it, right? Second problem is, most of the people do web analytics, right? So your head of the department or the provost or somebody will say, hey, what is the traffic on our network, on our web service, right? You are capturing all your connections on the front end. But if you move it here and if people hit it directly, you are not capturing the statistics. So you lose the web analytics of it, either through Urchin or Google Analytics or whatever. But there are issues like that you had to reconcile with. Now you say that, oh, I successfully moved it. But here is a problem. Another problem is when you want to hit the backend database, many applications have an XML file where you keep track of the username and password to hit the database, as well as a connection port and the database connection information. It's an XML file, right? If somebody can read it, they can hit your database. So there are security issues that you have to reconcile with, and if you program it properly, you can actually hide that information within the program rather than expose it in an XML file. And the third aspect is, now you say that, oh, my application is there, no problem, hunky-dory. Let me move my database back into Amazon. Well, not so fast. First of all, you might have been using a database on an Oracle server, right? Guess what? If you go to Amazon, do they support Oracle? So you have to think about the issues, right? If they have a licensing model for the application or the database that you already run, they might be able to support. Usually most of the cloud vendors support open source, right? They typically support out of the box MySQL, Postgres, or Apache Server and things like that. But if you have commercial applications or commercial vendors, you want to make sure that they are actually supporting the vendor before you can move it. Otherwise, you will have to actually port off all your applications based on that particular database. So these are some of the issues that I want to bring to your attention. And another thing is, there is no standard for the HTTP redirection. Remember, I told you that everybody is coming through the web front end and going through the back end. There is no standard for that. So if you move around something like this, you have to be extremely careful that your traffic is getting directed in the right way. Another problem is the last one. Usually within your organization, you monitor the applications. Somebody will get an email or an alert if something goes wrong with the application. When you move to the cloud, how do you monitor your application? Do they support SNMP? If you have something like HP OpenView or a Big Brother or something like that that you use internally or Nagios, which may be standards-based, you may be using SNMP because it is standard, right? Does the cloud provider give you a trap if something happens on their side? Probably not. You will have to go through their console and check it out everywhere. They might give you a scripting mechanism to do this, but you have to be proactive before you move your application to make sure that you can get the alert if your application goes down. These are some of the issues. One thing I wanted to mention is securing the multi-tiered applications is different now, because previously it was in your corporate environment, you could control everything, but now it is different. Because if you go from one leg to another leg, you can even have a server-level authentication. And when you move from one cloud provider to another cloud provider, where is your certificate? How do you make sure that these certificates can be inserted and you can connect them properly? All these issues will surface there. Another one is the security in the application chaining. That's precisely something similar to what I said. You can connect from one leg to another leg only from the authenticated side. And even that was complicated in the web services. But if you move to the cloud, does a cloud provider have something that will support this infrastructure? You have to be really careful about that. And of course, all these issues, who is going to monitor the application logs, who is going to do the application monitoring, chained tiers, security in the tiered components, and so on. So these are some of the issues that you have to reconcile with when you move to the web. Then there are different types of applications. When you assess the risk as a security professional, there may be applications that are external facing. It's not really for your internal users. There are students' inquiry system, online submissions for jobs or new students. And then there may be applications that are specific for teaching, something like Blackboard, Moodle, Sakai. And you know that somebody like Desire to Learn, they offer their own cloud environment, right? Blackboard offers their own cloud environment. So what's the trade-off? Do you want to keep it in-house or do you want to do it off-site? Then you have business tools or business applications which are internally used for administration. And of course, you have the core business applications. Are you sure that you want to move your core applications to the cloud? And if you have a medical school, that even more complicated. So here is a quote from the CSA guide. Just as critical application might be too important to move to the public cloud provider, there might be little or no reason to apply extensive security controls to low-value data migrating to the cloud. So you will find there is a balance between the two. You may find that the user needs something very silly, very simple. You don't have to put too many security controls over that. But on the other hand, if it is an application that you have to protect the data, there are financial information there or PCI compliance there, you have to be really serious about that. And I'll show the balance between those two. Actually, there are no mature framework for this. You'll have to do your homework, but I have something here that I can show that I'm trying to use. Of course, you have to deal with all the regulations. And when you move to the cloud, you want to make sure that the cloud provider is aware of these regulations and they are going to support some of these issues that you are going to reconcile with. So coming back again, as I mentioned, these are the service models. And I'm going to touch only on the SaaS and the PaaS side. I mostly concentrate on the SaaS, the PaaS side. When you go to the SaaS, there is another aspect you have to understand. It is multi-tenancy. Whether you are a social user or an institutional user or the corporate user within that cloud, you are all using the same application. Just the case of Gmail, right? A few years ago, there was a bug in Gmail. All you need is a Gmail ID. You can get into Gmail and read anybody's mail. Doesn't matter whether you're a social user or a corporate user or a Google user, Google corporate person. You could read anybody's email. They fixed the bug. But guess what? And they went to FISMA compliance. And even after that, in February 27, another Gmail bug deleted 40,000 users' mail. Guess what? So all I'm saying is multi-tenancy. So if there is a bug in the software, everybody in that environment is affected. No way out. So you are at the mercy of the cloud provider. And of course, there are platform as a service provider like Heroku, SpringSource I mentioned, Google App Engine allows you to create your own applications and deploy it on the cloud. But you have to be very, very careful as to what they offer. The first problem I see is when you go to the cloud, identity management. Most of the institutions spend a whole lot of time creating identity management system. Now, if you go to the cloud, most of the cloud providers, oh, no big deal, come here and create your user ID and password. Well, you already have a corporate username and password. Why can't you use it? Like a ping identity is allowing you to do the federation between your corporate environment and the cloud provider. Google is actually allowing you to do that. You should look into that. If you're going to the cloud, will they allow you to have a federation between your environment and the cloud? The beauty of that is if a person is terminated, you don't have to run around and figure out how many cloud applications does the user use. At the flip of a switch, you should be able to cut off their access. That, you have to be really careful about that. And do they have a scripting mechanism to integrate with your identity management system? Chances are most of the big vendors do, not the small ones. Another big one is I know that Dartmouth is actually using digital keys for all their employees as well as students. If you are using digital keys or certificates for all your employees, does the cloud provider support these certificates? I find very few, if any. Okay, and so there are different things you have to take into consideration just in terms of the access. Then you talk about interoperability, portability, and other security issues. So let's look at our data. Now, I told you that this is multi-tenancy. Multi-tenancy means anybody inside the cloud can do whatever they want to do with whatever you gave to them, right? So there is an inside threat from the cloud staff itself. How do you protect that? And then the other big part of it is the staff competency in your organization. Amazon has an SDK. Google has an SDK. Everybody has their own SDK. Does your staff has the competency to learn about all these SDK and integrate your applications into the cloud? It's not so easy as you think because it's a totally different SDK. They have to go through a learning process. Each vendor has their own way of doing it. Some may provide only .NET. Other may provide only Java. But if your core competency is PHP, you are stuck. Right? So you have to understand what is the implication of this, what do they provide in terms of SDK, do they support multi-platform. If they have web services, chances are that you can get away with most of this. So do your homework. And another one is internal programming threats. You are familiar with the salami techniques, right? When you are in your corporate environment, if my application developer developed an application and I developed in-house and deployed it in-house, I can do the application log monitoring, I can do auditing, I can do whatever I want and figure out whether this guy is actually doing something malicious. Now think about this. The programmer, if he really want to do something bad, he can put it into the code, and if your application is sitting outside, the salami techniques, they can do whatever they want. They can siphon the data wherever they want. How do you track it? Unless you have a mechanism to get into the cloud vendor and monitor the application, or they have a mechanism to tell you that somebody is doing something malicious, you won't notice it. So there are a lot of doors that you are opening up when you are developing the applications and putting out in the cloud environment. So be careful about that. So When you do the next release of the software, you know that if you want to migrate from Banner to the next version, you have to do a whole lot of rollout, right? Export the data, import the data, migration, and so on. So what about migration of the data, patch fixes and all that? Smile. You probably don't have to do much. So that's one aspect of the cloud that you are getting for free. But you may end up with a different user experience because they may change their APIs or the front ends and things like that. So this is something I quickly mentioned before. Every cloud provider, if they allow you to do the PaaS environment, has their own SDK. So they say, oh, come on and join us. Develop your applications, deploy it, done with it. They have their own API. They go to you. Now, if you want to move from one cloud vendor to the another cloud vendor, you have to learn a whole new SDK, a whole new API, redefine all your application and move it. They don't have any interoperability. IEEE is looking into standardizing this environment so there is a common framework so that you can move from one cloud vendor to another cloud vendor. You don't want to be stuck with one vendor, right? So it is important to think about that one. Most cloud providers have tools to migrate into the cloud. Gmail says that, oh, come on from the Exchange. We have a tool to migrate into Google Mail, right? Yahoo says the same thing. And Gmail also says that, oh, come on, you can come from Yahoo. We'll give you a tool to migrate everything. What if you want to get out? You are stuck. I saw your posting here. I don't know whether you can see it. Somebody did a posting on Microsoft saying that, hey, I want to get out of Gmail, go to Exchange. There is no tool. So this is a posting I found on the internet. So you have to think about it. If you go to one of these cloud providers, and if you want to get out of them, are you stuck with them? Think proactively about it, right? I had an incident very recently. One of my boss came to me and said, we want an event management system. She came to me on a Wednesday and said, I want it by Monday. I said, wow, that's quick. So I said, how can I do this? My developers cannot turn around that quick. Even though we had agreement with the TouchNet, they want a credit card service and all that. I said, let me think about it. So I went and browsed on Google and found that there are a few cloud providers who are providing event management systems. So I talked to one of them, said, oh, no big deal, we can turn around in 1 hour. No, oh, I said, that's great. Can you put our logo and everything? Oh, sure, we'll get a console for everything. And then it hit me, oh, I'm registering the staff here. Let me check with the marketing department. So I called the head of the marketing department and asked her, do we really need this data back from them? Of course. I called the cloud provider and I asked them, well, we registered these people on your website. It's easy to set it up. Can we get the data? Why do you need the data? I cannot get the data. And then he went back and called his professional services and came back and said, yeah, we can provide you the data. We'll give you an export program. It will cost you $6,000. Okay, so in the meantime, I had a couple of my internal developers. They actually put together something. Within a week, we were able to stand something up. So I ignored it. So all I'm saying is, before you go to the cloud, really think about what you are getting into. There are instances where you don't have to worry about it free. I'll show you some examples here. But you have to be careful what you are getting into. I already mentioned this one. So this is something I mentioned before. There is no standard APIs between the providers. You can say that it's not possible to move from SQL Server to Oracle that easily. Well, the key is that not that easily, but you can do it if you do something like ORM, like a Hibernate or something, and do it ahead of time in such a way that even if you want to move your database, you can actually switch it without getting bogged down with the specifics of the vendor. So think proactively. Do you have an exit strategy or a reroute strategy? These are a number of these applications. Okay. In Math Forum, I want to give you two examples where we had some issues because of the multi-tenancy. We had a source code control system, and we had some open source project that we were exposing to the whole world. And we had some collaboration with some universities where the students were actually developing part of this. At the same time, we had Math Forum part of it, which were all self-contained, right? So we wanted to make it this isolation. We gave people the key access so that they can come in not using password and username, but through the key access. Eventually, we found that it was exposed to everybody. Everybody could see everybody else. So we had to actually do the path-based access control. We learned it the hard way, but I don't know how many cloud providers will provide you upfront. You can go to somebody like the source code control online, forget the name, it's called GitHub, and you can do this, but you have to be careful. The other one is Mechanical Turk from Amazon. Okay, we had an issue where we were getting spams left and right. We tried Akismet, they could not handle our spam. we route our own neural network-based spam filtering, could not handle it. We are getting thousands and thousands of spams through our daily postings, not through emails, the online forums. So we said, what is the best way to handle this? Somebody has to actually look at this moderated list and see if this is an actual posting and then approve it. And then came along, we saw that there is Mechanical Turk from Amazon. What you do is you put these set of URLs out there and tell them, okay, I want you to look at each one of these URLs and say it is a real one or a spam. Categorize as a good one or a spam. If it is a good one, approve it. If it is a spam, trash it. All you have to do is, and they will do it for like a 1 cent for one URL or something. It's very cheap. So we thought, okay, this is a good idea. Rather than wasting somebody's time, let's give it to Amazon Turk. It's very easy, right? You spend $20, you get 20,000 of these filtered out so easily. But then it struck me, how do you know who is the guy who is actually doing this? He may be the spammer, right? And if he is a spammer, he got a gold pot, right? He will spam left and right to our institution, get the money out of it. So it's a vicious circle. You don't know who is out on the other side. So this is what I'm saying is you have to do your homework to see what is going on there. Some of the cloud providers, when you are moving your heavy-duty applications, I'm not talking about light applications, I'm talking about something medium-level or high-critical application, before you jump into the cloud, you have to see whether these cloud providers are certified. There are certain standards, and if you look at some of their compliance, you may see that they are reasonably good, and particularly the FISMA certification. This is a federal standard. They have to have a certain levels of NIST-based standard compliance. If they are compliant, they usually have a certain level of confidence. They will provide a certain level of security for their application. So those are some of the standards you have to be looking into. And another one is when you talk about infonomics, there is the value of the information as well as the value of the people. It doesn't get into anybody's budget or anywhere, but these are key things that you have to be careful about. The information is very valuable. You think the Facebook is valued just because of their hardware? It's the information, right? Google is valued because of the information. So there is a value for the information or the content. Chances are that the information in your organization may be much more valuable than you think. I was working in an institution where they had research data from Oracle One onwards for 30 years of patient data. They were tracking certain things. That is an amazing gold pot of information. You cannot get that data over 30 years, right? If you lose that data, if somebody gets a hold of the data, the research activity is suffering a lot. They may lose a lot of grant funding, right? So you have to be careful at what am I putting out there. So what is the risk associated with that? And as I mentioned before, there is no mature framework. But as a security professional, you have to take a hard look at it and say, okay, I know that the people will go to cloud no matter what, but how do I help them? Let us help them go to the cloud in a proper way so they do it in an informed way, not in a haphazard way. So what I typically do is I look at some of the metrics. Okay, I say, what is the frequency of this? Is it like a one-off thing? For example, I had one instance where the marketing department wanted to do a photo shootout for the employees. It's a one-time thing. They want to people sign up for their timesheet saying, oh, I want my photo at 10 o'clock. I want my photo at 11 o'clock. It's a one-off thing. If I want to stand an application like that, I had to spend the time to put it there. I had to spend somebody's resource to put it there. But there is already an application out in the cloud. There is no risk there. It's a one-time thing. I said, sure, go ahead, use it. They were happy. I was happy. I didn't have to spend any time. Thing worked, right? It's a low-hanging fruit. There is no risk associated with it. There is nothing to worry about it. Let them do it. They will be happy. Similarly, with the freshman starts, most of the university have blogs for the freshman students that they can dialogue with each other. If you really think about it, is it really valuable information? Is it like a blogging thing, right? Do you really care about this information? Do you want to store all the information? Chances are that there might not be much value unless you expose somebody's name or information like that. So be careful about it. And you say, it's not very critical. It's for 6 months. If I stand it, I might spend $5,000. Don't worry about it. Let me leave it to the cloud. Daily use by student. There are many applications. Like, for example, Pearson, you know, that the homeworks is now done online, right? The only question I have is, well, if the student does some homework, which is something very unique, And very interesting, who owns the IP for that particular homework, right? It is sitting in the Pearson network. Somebody could get it. And if that person says that, oh, I did it, right? Well, how do you control the IP associated with it? Because it's not in your purview, it is someone else. Does the faculty take care of it? How do you manage these issues, right? There's a whole lot of things. The other one is this is something I recently came across. One of our department came to me and said they want to have a hotel management simulation software, which is out in the cloud. We have a culinary department, which does the hospitality and the culinary aspect of it. They want to do the simulation. And I said, why do you want to go to the cloud? They said, well, this is fairly easy. The staff can set it up. Students can set it up. And I looked at the application. I said to myself, you know, if I were to develop this application, it'll cost me at least $50,000. And the subscription is $2,500, right? It's a no-brainer, right? So and I looked at it. There is practically nothing I am going to lose. There is no risk. There's no data that we have to keep. I checked back with the head of the department. Is there any data from any of the students that you want to keep later? He said, nope. This is just an exercise for the students. It's a simulation. No-brainer, right? So I just then and there I said, ah, go ahead. So I called the vendor and said, let's have a vendor agreement for this, and we are on the track. There's another one called a revenue simulation. It's similar, $1,500 for 15 students. I said, go ahead. What's the big deal? Rather than me spending $50,000, and then they complain to me, say, your software is buggy. It doesn't work the way I want it. Let somebody have it, right? So I give it to them. So all I'm saying is there is a big trade-off, right? Do the homework. You have to be careful as to what you are inheriting. Cloud is there for some more time. It will be there. People are already using cloud, right? You cannot stop them. Twitter, Facebook, all these things are, you know, students come around with, most of the students have iPhones or iPad these days, right? They don't care about a laptop. They don't need your network. They will say, oh, this is not your network. This is my network. I pay for it, right? But you better make sure that you can provide the service so that they will be happy and you will be happy. A lot of people base their evaluation just based on the ROI. I'm saying that don't just look at the ROI. Think about the security implications also. Do you have an extra strategy? What is in line with the institutional policy and so on and so forth. Another thing that struck me in terms of cloud was the three generation of information stealing. In the first generation, if you had an Oracle database or some database where you had all your information, if the guy sitting in your database, database administrator in your data center, if he wants to sell this data, he will take a dump of the database and sell it to somebody, right? And the guy at the other end has to have a server and the database software to load this thing, right? He had to have a server and the software to run it. That was the first generation. Look at the second generation. We had virtual servers, right? I can run the whole thing on a virtual box. Guess what? What is your virtual server? It is software, right? I can put the whole image on a USB drive and give it to somebody. He can walk away with the USB drive. Oh, I don't need a server. I don't need the software. I can do it with the player. All I need is a player to replay this virtual image. Got away with it, right? Now we come to the cloud generation. You put something out in the cloud, and they have a username and password administrating your database and everything. All you have to do is sell your username and password to somebody else. They will get into the cloud and get your data out. So what I'm saying is the evolution, it makes it much more easy for somebody to steal your information. So be careful about what you're getting into, and think very proactively as to what you should be doing about it. So application security in the SaaS environment depends on the cloud provider. All I'm saying is there may be a lot of applications that you can let the user use it on the cloud, but set up an institutional policy so that people are aware of the fact that they should not be arbitrarily going to the cloud and running their own application. Check with somebody so that you can make sure. But you cannot take 2 weeks for a turnaround. By the time you turn around, they will already be in the cloud. So you should be nimble. You should keep up with the technology so that when they come to you and talk about, can I use Facebook, you should make a resolution just like that. Within a couple of minutes, saying that, okay, what are the security risks? I made a decision. Let them go with it or no. So those are the things you have to be careful about. The most important thing is in the PaaS environment, platform as a service, that to me is more attractive because you can do a little bit of customization. But you have to be careful as to What are the mechanisms that you put in place to protect yourself and the institution? So those were the most of my thoughts on this. Again, these are my thoughts based on my experience. You may have a different experience. Feel free to ask that. And there are two references. I found it here. I think I have it, if I can get to this one, see if I can bring it here. So there was an article in the InfoWorld. Gartner had a 7 cloud computing security risk. And I think there's another one, if I have it here, I think the same thing. But anyway, I digress. So those were my thoughts. And if you have any questions, I don't know how much time I have, but if you have questions, I'll take it. Yeah. Yeah, remember I told you right from the beginning I'm not going to touch on the data because there is a lot of issues related to data, because if you have email in your data and if the data is stored in an EU country, it is confidential information. You have to have a separate service level agreement. But in US, it's not a big deal. In US, if you have social security number in your data, that's a problem, right? So depending on where the cloud provider is storing the data, that is important. And most of the cloud provider in their SLA will tell you where exactly do you want the data to be stored. And so there are, that's beyond what I said, and there are many people who can help you. I know that there are some attorneys in California who just specialize on the cloud. They work with some of the institutions. I was in a Trend Micro meeting in California a few months back, and there were a couple of attorneys in California who are actually dealing with this issue. So I don't want to get into the legal aspect of data. That's why I made the suppression that the data is a whole lot of things to work on. That's a very good strategy. Actually, there is a vendor called Voltage.com. If you go to their site, they actually does it for you. They have a mechanism where you can encrypt on the back end. So the data that goes into the database is completely encrypted. Even if you hit the database directly, you will not see clear text. The data is encrypted in it, but you have to use their API to get into the data. And many institutions are using Voltage for their email encryption. And you are right, it's a good way to address that issue, that before the data is resident on the disk, if you can encrypt it, it will save a lot.
And be sure to repeat the questions for the online crowd. Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, so the comment was about storing the data. Depending on the nationality or where the data center resides, they may have national laws on the top of the international laws. So there is a whole lot of series of laws that you have to address. The best thing is, there was a talk earlier about making sure that you line up with your institutional attorneys so that they are in line with your service level agreements and things like that. I'm not an attorney, so don't hold me to that. Okay. If you don't have any questions, my contact information is there. I'll be happy to share any of the information with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.